Yeah. I think what I've discovered is that with the even with the parallelization, the tool that I'm using doesn't have a chunking term, although I'm going to test that to pass through just like bits to each thread. So I think Cameron's chunking tool will probably be really useful, and you can send off the chunks to in parallel.
Makes sense.
Yeah, unfortunately, yeah, I think 32-bit number issues when you got too many pixels.
We need 32-bit numbers?
Apparently, I need more than that.
Really?
Yeah. Well, it seems like I shouldn't have that many job IDs. Don't know
Oh,
why it
that's what
took.
you mean.
As in, when I tried to split up all the pixels, they each got assigned a job ID by the internal like pool.map thing.
Oh,
And
right.
then just the number was too big. So
God.
it's like, I don't know how to handle this number.
Hi, Cameron.
Morning.
Good morning. So Alec, I see in the notes that you fixed the progress bars in RM tools.
Yes. using TQDM as the to have to manage the progress bars.
So it's kind of entertaining because I have a summer student working for me at the moment, and I've got him sort of implementing all kinds of stuff in RM tools that I don't have time for. And the first thing that I gave him to do was to put progress bars back in.
That was mainly just for my own sanity, just to see if things were progressing.
Jesus.
The one thing that I have been playing with mostly is getting clean parallelized.
Musical chairs.
What I've discovered though is that the current method I'm using to parallelize doesn't have, well, I'm going to try and see if I can get a chunking option enabled, but by default it doesn't. And it the number of if you throw
Seeing
a large
George's
image at it, the
plots
number of
on
pixels
Slack,
gets too
mistakes being
big,
leakage
and it
buttons.
can't pass just
Yes,
the pixel number.
versus bean.
It's over
That was cool.
Yeah, that's
like a
starting
float
to make it a bit
32,
more
I think it
sensible.
prints out.
Or at least consistency with what I'm seeing.
So the
Sorry.
whether or not I can get that working, or whether it'd be you need then have to use
Oh,
the
whoops.
chunking tool that you're using or you're making, I
That
think
does
that
sort
could
of give
be
you respect
really
for the
useful as
work
well to
that
do the
comes
parallel
with making
chunking as
use of it.
well.
I was just thinking it would be good to send you my chunking tool, but sadly, it is sitting on my work laptop, not my personal one. I don't have the ambition to walk back to work. So I will try to remember to send you whatever I have when I'm done tomorrow.
So I think
Yeah.
we'll charge this thing.
But so
Be
it's
helpful.
the stuff I've been working on is just sitting on a fork of the Serato Tools RM branch. So feel free to pull as little or as much into the whatever you guys like to work on, and we'll see what ends up being useful.
Whenever you think you're happy with it, I'm not sure if there's
Go
a
ahead.
way to kind of just push it back to me or do anything, pull requests or
Need
something.
that anyway.
Yeah.
But yeah, whenever you're happy with it, let me know and I'll yeah. figure out how to integrate it back in. Out of curiosity, your parallelization method, does it invoke any kind of external dependencies?
Yeah, the one that I'm using is Schwimbad.
Schwimbad?
Yeah. are you familiar with that one?
No.
It lets you, it uses the same syntax as the multiprocessing module. In fact, one of the things it uses is multiprocessing, so that the pool.map syntax, but it allows you to use different pools, hence the German Schwimbad. So you can run it in MPI or even in serial and keep the syntax all the same and just pass different command line arguments to it, and it'll handle that for you.
Yeah. Cool.
Okay. Should we get started? Trying to convince myself.
Oh, right.
Let's do a round table. I plotted a couple of animations last night, which are on the Slack, which sort of just saying with Emil just a minute ago, seems to make the leakage make more sense. So to help navigate that a little bit, I'll make a footprint plot after we're done talking, just to sort of see which beams are worst, like where they are in terms of geography related to the path. What about yourself, Em?
I didn't have much possum related stuff to talk about.
What are you going to work on today?
Ish. No,
yes. Okay. I'll give you a few things then.
I'm trying to work out my list of things.
Yeah.
I'm just here more just to, I guess, be in the atmosphere in okay. case something comes up and I can contribute to it.
Okay, cool. Oh, don't forget the circular polarization discussion. It's two. I think it's two.
I'll be there for sure.
Yeah. Morning, Matthew. How you doing?
Good morning. I'm pretty good.
Any news to report?
No, I went to sleep last night. It was great. this morning, I'm going to do, try and get a polarization comparison within VSS.
Yeah. Cool. Alrighty. I saw the plots that you put in here yesterday.
Yeah, same ones I shared last night.
Yep. Good. How about you, Craig?
Yes, I am. I'll be looking at the imaging of the Fornax midband data again to start off with, and then I'll transition over onto the off-axis polarization leakage maps fitting that I was doing yesterday. So.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, that'd be good. I'd be good to see that.
Yeah, I should be able to plot that up soonish anyway.
Okay.
Some initial things.
So I've been playing around with getting the parallel clean working, and it's always great when you throw real data at it, it falls over. I put Craig's myriad imaging on Fornax A through, so I ran it through RN synthesis, and when I went to do the RN clean, I discovered that the number of pixels was too large for a 32-bit number, which caused certain other packages to fall over. So I'm going to see if it can be chunked within the current routines that are in there. If not, it might be a useful combination with Cameron's chunking tool. And also, it also found that my image tool, like make a quick picture tool, also fell over on large data because apparently it read it all into memory, even though it claims to not be reading into memory.
Right.
So I'm going to see if I can fire an array around that too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Cool. Okay. Good. And I should have reported on what Larry wrote to me today. He's not joining us today. he's basically pointing out that, it's a bit of a problem that the beam images aren't primary beam corrected because mosaics are too big to handle. He's thinking specifically of the cubes. If the cube per beam cube isn't primary beam corrected, the mosaic is pretty unreasonable to have to load. So I I think, you know, having a region extracted, Cameron, is probably a good compromise there out of the mosaic.
But you could just analytically apply a correction.
Yeah. This is true.
Fairly trivial.
This is true. God. Anyway, that's what he wrote.
Because that's all we'd be doing if we were probably correcting, because we just use simple Gaussian at the moment.
Yeah, that's true. That's true enough. Okay, I'll write back to him and say that. And he's got a couple of plots that he put on the Slack channel about sources with what appears to be interesting polarization properties.
Interesting bad or interesting good?
Well, he says there's one that he points out in particular where he says this is either a great discovery or signs of a big problem.
That's what you want.
So take a look at that later on, but he's posted it in the Slack, I think. So
it's PC down at the moment.
Sorry. That's all right. Okay, so that's that. Cameron? How'd it go for you today?
Actually a lot better today than yesterday.
That's good.
So as I said, like I work primarily on chunking code. I tried to be moderately clever and make sure that it had a sort of a minimum memory footprint. And I seem to have succeeded more by luck than good management, but
that counts.
So I still have some tests to do, but I have at least successfully disassembled an image and reassemble it back. And according to KViz, there's zero difference between the pixels in the original and the reconstruction. So. Although I'm a little confused because the reconstruction is 200 bytes smaller than the original. And I don't know where those 200 bytes went.
Are they in the header, perhaps?
That's the only thing. But all the header information is still there as well. So it's very mysterious.
Because the header cards are 80 bytes.
Oh, yeah, right.
And then they have to be in 2,880 byte chunks. So that's quite.
Is there some junk heading somewhere in the image? Like, I wouldn't be super shocked if.
But it's like when you're putting a.
So.
Can you're working on a car and you're left with one screw at the end. Like, that is exactly where that came from.
Can you hex dump them and diff that?
That's a good thought, I suppose. But I mean, at this point, it's working, so I'm happy with it.
Maybe it's the soul of the cube.
Yeah, we tried doing science with the reconstructed image. It just all fails. Nothing works.
Yeah.
And the house is being haunted by Stokes parameters.
Yeah, it's like 200 bytes. Why?
But, yeah, seriously.
But so far, so good. And so I guess the only thing that is it's not particularly useful in terms of people who want cutouts of interesting regions, because the way I wrote it is it converts the entire image plane into a one-dimensional kind of list of pixels and then chops that up. So if you try opening one, you don't get a nice little bite-sized kind of picture. But
right.
I'm going to write a separate function, I think, that cuts out postage stamps wherever you like. I probably have one stashed away somewhere from before.
Yeah.
That'll be a cool thing to have on hand.
That also sounds good from like a 3D analysis perspective. If there's anything you need to do that does rely on local pixel information.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So that kind of thing. And so I'm going to test a few things. Like I haven't actually run the individual chunks through the 3D arm synthesis yet. But I don't anticipate any problems, which means there probably will be some, but knowing how building scripts works. But in principle, everything should work.
Cool.
I'm reasonably satisfied with this so far.
Yeah, well, it sounds, you sound much, much more chipper than you did yesterday, so that's all good too. Great, okay. Hi, Shannon, how are you?
Good. Hello. Hi.
Hi. How's it going?
Good. Thank you. Craig had suggested yesterday that maybe the two main advanced chunks I cut off was too low. So I was playing around with increasing that. And I think he was right. Yeah, basically if you go up to 3, and then I went up to 3 and then 4, and it just, yeah, decreases the number of really large leakage values that are in the plot. I'll put a slides up. I made a couple of slides for it. I'll put them on the Possum channel. But yeah, if you go up to 4 Milijansky cutoff, there's nothing above 5%, which I know isn't, I assume, ideal, but it really drastically reduces the really high values you're seeing. And I also had a look at some of the really anomalous ones, so like 19-20% values, and they're all on artifacts in the image, definitely. So yeah, so I'll put up those images now just so you can look at them. But I don't know what, I mean, when I made the RM grids, I think I used a minimum Stokes eye of 4.5, just to get rid of, because below that there were a lot of strange PI values and polarized fraction values and all that. So I don't think it's maybe unreasonable to assume a 4 Milijansky cutoff. But anyways, just that's what I found.
Okay. What was the RMS again? I've forgotten. Was it sort of
20-ish microjanskys per beam, I think.
Yeah, okay. So that's pretty high signal to noise then, isn't it, really? 4.5, you know, 4 or 5 milijanskys.
Yeah, I have to have another look at my data, but I was seeing it's like a RMS of closer to 1 milijansky, a little bit below. So.
Oh, right.
Yeah, but I'll have a look at that and see what the average is. I didn't take a good look. Wow. That's why I chose the 4.5.
Per channel versus all bands? RMSs?
Yeah.
That can make the conversation a bit more complicated.
Yeah. I don't know if I'm fully equipped to answer that question either. So.
Okay. Okay, good. Yeah, that would be good to clarify. So I've been using For the fields I've been looking at, I've been using a signal noise cut of 10, both in V and I. I think it's largely the Stokes V cut that was more constraining in my case, anyway.
Okay.
It could be that, you know, the cut that you're seeing in that you're using in Stokes I is, you know, actually getting your typical Stokes V up again above some certain threshold. You know what I mean? Because they're all sort of at whatever percent. And so when you cut out the low Stokes I sources, you're also cutting out the ones with a low Stokes V as well.
Right.
Anyway, you might be able to, you know, be a bit more generous with the Stokes I cut if you also apply a Stokes V cut too, is what I'm really saying. Oh,
right, yeah, okay. I'll look at that.
Yeah, okay. Cool, okay. Yeah, good. Anything else we should talk about today? Okay. Well, if not, maybe we'll just get back to work then.
Let us.
Okay. Thanks, guys. Feel free to stay on if you want. Feel free to go to sleep if you want.
Brian had said something about wanting to have a conversation at 11 a.m. your time.
Oh, okay.
Is that the circular pole or is that?
No, something else, I guess. When did you say that?
Earlier today at 3 o'clock my time. That's about 4 hours ago.
The galactic plane for Axfield.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I just saw that, actually. 11 a.m. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, sure. No problem.
Yeah. I might pop back for that, I guess.
Okay. Yep.
But, yeah. Until then, good luck.
Thanks. I wish you luck. All right. Thanks, guys. Talk to you later, perhaps. Otherwise, tomorrow.
Yep.
We go.
All right. See if I can get this Nespresso card recharged.
Recharge-o.
So, I sent you a question yesterday, but maybe you haven't seen it. Why do we care about hobbles in the sensitivity across the field.
I didn't see
that. I
know
Emu cares about it just because their tool doesn't handle it. But the cosmology tests that they're doing, but I don't really know why it matters for Possum. Certainly bandpass wobbles I can understand because I want those to interfere with the ERM determination.
Mm-hmm. I don't know, to be honest with you. I mean, I don't think it's been really clarified why.
So I can understand the wanting the beamers closer because you obviously don't want to go too far out for the reasons that you want to for the leakage.
Yeah.
So that kind of is associated with the sensitivity ripple, but I wouldn't have thought the sensitivity ripple in itself is a concern. It's more just
The only thing that comes to mind would be something about uniformity of an RM grid, but I don't think that's, you know, who cares about a 20% sensitivity?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I'm not sure it's been really thought of in great detail. It's probably just, you know, if you can have a flat sensitivity floor, that would be great.
Sure,
you know
what I mean? That's always not ideal. I just feel
I bet
maybe it's
it.
Not good to get hung up on that if that's not really, if it's a non-issue.
Yeah, I suspect that's probably the long and short of it, really. So it's just... It would be nice to have flat sensitivity, wouldn't it?
Yeah. I think more than that, it would be nicer to have uniform leakage that's slow.
Yeah, I think the leakage is the bigger problem.
Yes.
That's pretty clear.
To me, that's probably the greater concern. And the ripple. Whatever.
Yeah, the bandpass ripple.
That is,
yeah. Well, the bandpass ripple, I think, has to be fixed. Otherwise, we should just stop now.
Well, I mean, it's not disastrous.
Morning. Hey,
how
you
going? Hey, how's it going?
Battling through traffic.
That's right. It'll be fixed.
I have immense faith in Aaron's fixing ability.
There you go.
Thank you, Envoy.
It's a big thing to think.
Really?
It's amazing what people are actually willing to accept when they can get something.
We'll
still take that.
Yeah. At the end of the day, seriously, if you provide like awful cubes, I'll say, well, we'll use them anyway.
But yes, I mean, we always strive to.
We can provide awful cubes.
But I'm really worried about the leakage, though. I mean, your point that you made yesterday is still true. The leakage values are quite large, right? And, okay, now we know they're coming from outer beams, but they're still quite large, right? We're not going to have an inner beam on everything. In fact, we're going to have an inner beam on a low fraction of the sky, right? It'll be mostly outer beams on most of the sky. So.
Yeah.
So we have lots of leakage to do.
If it's not interleaved.
Hey?
If it's not interleaved. If it's interleaved, then you will have beams on most, inner beams on most.
No, well, I mean, what I'm saying is, in the footprint, the beams in the outer part of the footprint have a larger leakage value.
Yeah, I know,
right?
But if you're interleaved,
mm-hmm.
then you do have sections of the sky where you do have the inner beams
covering
most of the sky.
No. No, I don't
it's
think so. No, interleave is just like a half beam off, right?
I think it's more than half a beam.
Is it?
I thought it was only half a beam in each direction.
Is it more than that?
Also,
I mean, it depends on how you do it, of course, but...
So I combine the two, let me check. I don't even have that anymore.
What is going on?
What's all this
garbage?
I'm just trying to sort out what.
Antenna 5A.
I keep having to delete stuff that's too testing this one. Thank you.
Some old school plotting right there, isn't it?
Exactly what you're referring to. Fun fact, this was generated on the first computer ever made.
God. I think I might take a nap.
So what's this leakage plot?
What do you mean, what is this leakage plot? Have you not been staring at it in wonder all night?
It's pretty good.
All right, it's in the busy days channel. I totally missed that.
Yeah, there's a lot in the busy days channel now.
Because we've been busy.
Yeah.
It's a good sign.
Some extremely clear patterns. Somebody's being really, really clear patterns.
Wow.
So my task today is to map out where the individual beams are relative to each other so you can understand these a little bit more. And there's a radial version as well. This one. Where the key thing here is that the central beams have a very low level of leakage, very few sources, and with a very low V over I.
Okay.
When you get to the other beams, get this
big
blowout of big leakage.
Yeah. That's similar to what I was saying with the mosaics, right? Like the things at the edge were pretty bad.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Even after mosaicing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Agreed.
I still think we should get some stats on the, the part of the beam that will end up being weighted most heavily in the mosaics, just to see what will come out in the mosaics as a whole.
Mm-hmm. Well, so these catalogs I've got now, the work you were doing was on the big master mosaic, wasn't it? Everything all mosaic together, right? So that's the best case situation. So I can give you the catalogs, or I point you to the catalogs from the individual beams, which you can then cross-match with the master catalog, and we can look at before and after, the leakage before and after mosaicing.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I'd suggest that that's probably what to do.
In, what was it, close pack 36? How far, the pitch of 0.9, how far in a close pack 36 can you get from the beam center? I worked this out while I gave it.
What's the furthest distance, you mean?
Yeah, before you're sort of over into the next beam, and the next beam's getting rapidly weighted more heavily. You're never going to get too much further out than, say, like 0.6 or something like that. So a lot of the really nasty sort of leakage values are happening sort of beyond that. Anyway, yeah. We should have a look at that. So what's Brian got here for us? Some NVSS RMs.
This concerns me that this scanner is outside of the errors.
For the RM.
But at least there seems to be some.
My tab key has fallen off.
That's not kind of squint a bit. Whoa. I hope there's a bit of a
I just clip that back on.
Did you
play green sign?
Did you bash it with great fury?
No, the sign flip is remains.
I'm trying to keep my laptops.
I mean, that's probably all right. This one, that's however, not is not very good.
Knock it off.
at the moment.
over here.
Don't worry. If it gets real desperate, we'll do something about it.
Oh, die quietly, would you?
So this is an image I made of everything the Vampire's Calibrator sees. So this is basically, I think it's 140 square degrees. Because you know, when you do the Vampire's Calibration, you basically shift the footprint around.
Yeah.
So I basically imaged every single beam, regardless of where it was pointing, and then mosaiced it all together.
Sounds good, yeah. So it's like a zillion beams, yeah.
Yeah, 121, basically. Well, so
oh, it's 11 by
36 one. Squared, but there's 121.
Yeah, with the overlaps, it's only 21. Yeah, sure.
Good. And, cool. You know, image looks fine. It's only like 3 minutes per pointing, so it's not uber awesome, but, you know, it's not horrible.
Mm-hmm.
And Snakes V is, despite there being gazillions of sources, there's maybe, you know, just a few. So it's a Jansky, over a Jansky source. And that's a Milli Jansky.
So that's 0.1%.
So, I mean, that's what I typically see. So I don't know what the heck's going on with these other ones.
I don't know. It's tight. What have you done with the... You didn't do anything with the beam apart from give it a Gaussian, right?
Yeah. Yeah, same. I mean, just doing basically the same thing that everything else is doing.
Yeah. Well, in fact, I used your mosaicing technique, basically, for stitching together. Oh, I mean, the only possible difference, as you pointed out before, is if WSClean is messing something up.
I know it screwed up some of the polarization stuff, because early on when I was checking it against reality, I told Andre it's wrong. It's got something not right, because it's producing the wrong signs and RNs. And,
what, for ASCAP, you mean?
No, this was for MW8.
Right. Well, that's a beam issue, but it's a definition issue, isn't it? It's got to be just like ASCAP. It's a, you know, X and, like, X and Y are not really X and Y, right?
I have no idea what it does internally.
No, no, I'm saying that, you know, the telescope has X and Y defined in a way which is inconsistent with the IAU definition of what X and Y really mean, right? X is east and Y is north, that kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
Or so the dipoles are like this or something, right? So.
But then, I mean, it's still producing results which aren't consistent with reality. So there must be something in that it's doing that's not
correct. Yeah, I guess you're doing.
And that shouldn't cause, I wouldn't have thought that would cause leakage. It shouldn't. At least no more so than any other imaging package.
So far, besides eyeball, I mean, have you done source finding on this instead of eyeballing?
Well, I mean, eyeballing is the most accurate because you don't see anything in there that's, you know, above some tiny fraction of, I mean, this is obviously picking up stuff everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, have you tried eyeballing the images? Just make sure source finding isn't screwing up.
No, to be fair.
Because that would be the safest check.
Yeah. No, I haven't.
Because if source finding is finding something in there that's not there, then that that wouldn't be right either.
No, but I think it's, I don't see how that would be the case, honestly. Well, no, I think we, you know, in the mosaic, you know, Andrew and I looked at the mosaic the other day, and it was not, it's just like that, basically, where you see the occasional little lip here and there. But, you know, don't forget to use the individual beams, right? Pre-mosaic. I'm looking at here.
Sure, but if you're just looking at the central bit, I mean, yours was still picking up stuff that was quite a few percent.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing higher than 0.2% here.
Yeah, well, we'll look at the mosaic later on today and see if it's inconsistent with this. I think I see your concern, but I'm not sure if it's clear to me yet.
I guess I'm just trying to get rid of the obvious, you know, check, make sure it's not a software bug.
Yeah, sure. I'm just not quite so sure that the difference is.
When you go through lots of layers of software, there's always danger that you miss things.
Absolutely, yes.
Not to say it's not there. I know there must be leakage in there.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe this was a special case because it's obviously taken as part of the calibration scan. So if anything, it's going to have the best calibration.
Well, that's true.
That you can get.
That's true, yeah.
But I haven't done any phase calc. So.
But that won't affect leakage. Right?
It can. Potentially. Phase calc can do all sorts of funny things.
Mm. I mean, the XY phase could do something, but that's already calibrated by the beamformer.
Yeah, it's right. Not. This isn't a problem. I'm sorry. Yes.
So this would be a common phase offset.
That's a shame I got rid of that data. Otherwise, I could have just run it through. Try to see if I can get back in
there. Here we go. Back in action.
Such a pain always running out of disk space.
Yeah. Which tasks can I do with a rocking headache?
Got a good operation going on. Yeah.
I took 3 this morning and they didn't seem to have any effect whatsoever.
It's gone beyond me, over the counters. Did you mix both of the over the counter painkillers? Oh yeah, it's always good to get some ibuprofen and paracetamol.
Yeah, isn't that, what's that called? There's one, is it Panadol that's a mixture?
No, Panadol's just paracetamol.
Really? Yeah. There is one though that's like, or is,
yeah. I mean, if you ask someone who's been in the, like, been around a while, they may have a stash of Panadol with codeine, because when it went illegal last year, everyone bought it up.
Wow.
I do have it, but I'm not giving it to anyone.
I didn't know they sold that. With codeine?
Yeah.
Yeah, over the counter until last year.
Yeah, now you have to have a prescription.
So, any middle-aged folks will have
stash.
A huge stash.
What are you trying to say about middle-aged folks?
I'm trying to say I know people without giving away who. Alternatively, maybe it's middle-aged folks with all the sense to actually go out and get the codeine.
Okay, so now you're calling me middle-aged and not sensitive.
I didn't say you were middle-aged. But no, otherwise, you'd have a stash of codeine.
Oh, right. I'm definitely middle-aged.
Oh, there
I have to reluctantly admit that I am now middle-aged.
Yeah.
All right. Let's see. Is Motley being killed today? No. This is incredible.
For now.
Brooke and I are like talking about Albuquerque. Like,
on the other hand, Zeus is rolling
for young people like us live. I'm like, hang on a second.
Myrtle's a little bit slow.
Shocking. I think that's the main thing as to whether or not our jobs are dying. It's not the server, it's the disk. And, like, Myrtle 2 has Naomi's group and everyone else because Myrtle 1 is full.
Yeah. Let's see on that. What have we got?
If you're doing a disk-bound job, ask IT to copy across the file to Malice or Motley for you. Just specifically say that or they'll put it on Mac.
Yeah.
And then, like, bump Natalia.
Yeah, I think literally everyone's on there.
Yeah.
Typhoon. Even Julie's on there.
Julie's been on there. What? Wait, really?
There's Myrtle 2 / Julie.
She was on Myrtle 1.
She's on Myrtle 2 now.
Okay, I've still got access to her Myrtle 1 partition. If you want extra space.
No, it's fine. I'm not out of space yet.
And that leakage pattern isn't constant per beam, right? It changes depending on the beam.
Yeah.
Like the orientation of the dipole like thing.
Yes, definitely, yes.
So the clover leaf that walks around.
Yeah, I'm gonna try and see if I can figure out where the heck the
That's weird.
Beams are relative to each other now.
Yeah.
I think the square is the rack stuff, yeah.
Yeah.
Hopefully it's not completely random.
No, it's a fairly simple Well, sorry.
No, the numbers kind of go, they start small, yeah, little, and they kind of go like out in a weird way.
Yeah, sorry. Square 6x6 is a bit funny because it does a bit of a twirl around.
Yeah.
I can send you this if that's.
I'll just pop it in the Slack if you don't mind.
Can work out where it was.
Yeah, I was going to. But it's oriented which way? It's a 45 degree angle, isn't it?
No,
maybe it doesn't matter, actually.
It shouldn't.
It doesn't matter.
Because I think for this one it was which observation?
It's A141.
Oh, just check.
Or A142, as I learned yesterday, actually.
Because I think that changed later on.
Push it.
It's 46 plus. Ah, yeah, you're right. 45 degree.
Mm, yeah.
Oh, hold on.
What?
No. So then they're doing minus 45 to bring it back again, so it's actually zero.
Okay. So it's square on the sky and everything's rotated. Wait, what?
No, everything's just basically. So it looks like that thing that I showed you.
Uh-huh. So what's the 45 and the minus 45 for? That's to put the orientation of the beam pattern on, you know, appropriately on the path. Is that something like that?
I don't know. I think this is the thing that Wasim is going to be defining.
Uh-huh. Yes. I would love to see that.
Rotation to apply. Yeah, I don't know.
Okie dokie.
Turns out accidentally running a JN on the RMS image, really, really good idea. It
found the noise.
I found some noise.
So it turns out you can pass a chunk size if you use multiprocessing, but it's not available in the MPI pool.
Pass the chunk size.
Oh. Goody.
Let's generate one just to be sure. So, it's not what it actually is.
FDF.
Say it again, I'm sorry.
I'll just generate one of those files for that actual observation just so that we're sure that it's the right thing.
Yeah, I think Wasim was going to try and do that yesterday, but Astro was needs to be up for that to work, doesn't it?
Chunk. 100.
Good God. Not computing today. Get your key back on.
Yes, I did.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nope.
This .x resources file.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's time to enter a new world of cavers.
Never saw him again.
It does get coordinates, but doesn't. Oh, actually, no, it does have an offset as well. Which might, well, I'll just send you that as well, just in case it's useful, because you can probably parse that in a simple Python script if you want to do orient it quickly. Wow. The command I put in as well to get it.
Yeah, I'm just actually pulling it out from the FITS headers of one of the footprints anyway, just to.
Right.
Just because it's something that I feel like I can actually do right now. But yeah, that'll be useful for sure.
I've sent that across as well.
Cool, thanks.
Now it's... Hey, Emil, what are the possible colors you can pass to the KVS background option?
Yes.
I just tried to make it black, but now it seems to be stuck on white, blinding white.
You may have to restart.
You've
your
blown
X.
It.
Oh, I see. Yeah, I need to restart. All right. Yeah. Although I have a feeling that black may be terrible. Then I'll be able to read it.
Ended up with black on black.
Yeah.
Sounds like something out of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. It's a black panel with black buttons.
Yep.
Black message just came up and said.
Yep.
That's awesome. Stealth mode.
So only the pro cavers uses. You have to already know where everything is.
Some black belt stuff. I mean, that's how I feel when people use cavers in front of me. So I don't think the black and black is going to change anything.
Good God. I like grey. Grey's good. Oh, but the highlight colour is still green, just to remind you that you're still in KVIS.
Yeah. Yeah, I did notice that. Probably changes the background, not everything else.
But see the little highlight bar is still KVIS green.
Yeah, it's awesome. I love KVIS green. My favorite shade of
getting your car painted in KVIS green.
I will. Get my house painted in KVIS green.
Cat.
Ooh, it's like the heady early days of computing writ large. Oh.
Okay, we seem to be cleaning. Haven't hit a number that's too big for a 32-bit integer.
Sorry, you're right. Probably is small offset. I thought it was bigger than that.
Ah, okay. Right. Yeah, I thought it was like half beam or something.
It must be confusing with we did an LMC observation where it was something a bit different. Because that was 3 interleaves.
Okay.
4.5. trilogy in four parts.
So
very small beams.
They're extremely small beams. Are these consistent with what you showed me? I wonder. I think I'd have to correct for cosine declination here. As usual.
Blasted term.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely do.
It's flipped.
Yeah, because I think east is this is over here. Right.
Yeah.
Flip this way, is what you mean, right?
Oh, yeah, sorry. Yeah. No, right.
I'll fix that. Not that I really need to, since you've already given me the numbers, but yeah, I've got my mind fixed on it.
Get your eye fixed on Mordor.
Oops.
So why would the leakage in the outer beams be worse?
It's just because of beam shape between XX and YY. Oh, sorry, X and Y. So it's worse.
Okay, at the edge of the beam.
It's more elliptical and the
right.
Kind of.
Yeah, yeah. The
crossed.
They're not quite perpendicular. Is that right?
Well, even if it's, they're not basically aligned.
Yeah.
So because they're like this.
Yeah.
You get more of one in this one and less of the other.
Mm.
So when you take the difference, you get more crap left behind.
Yep.
If they were the same shape, even if they were regular shape but the same, that would be perfect.
Mm.
But the different shape and different orientation just to complicate matters.
Mm-hmm.
And it gets worse as you get further out, just because they, I think just the way the weighting of the elements comes together.
Mm-hmm.
So they are looking into trying to make it more roundish, but it's usually at a loss of some sensitivity to do that.
Mm.
It's actually a similar problem to what we had with MWA, because the X and Y beams were different just because of the projection effects. Because we didn't know 100% what those beams actually were, we always end up with some residual error, which manifests itself as a kind of leakage.
Yep.
Yeah. I think it's not leakage in the technical term that we normally consider as leakage. It's just because we don't properly correct for the beam.
Yep.
Ooh. So I've done something wrong.
You've drawn some slinkies.
I don't know what I've done, but I like it.
That's a smile.
Yeah. That should be the new footprint.
What the hell has happened here? That's awesome. Try again.
Do not bask her. Do not collect $200.
Do not collect anything apart.
Oh, that's a very long phone number.
Yep. Okay. Something is going horribly, horribly wrong. Did I nudge you?
Okay. Did you want to?
Nope. Let me just give you a bit of a nudge. Yeah, okay. That's the same one. Yeah, I know. It's much more, it's much duller now, isn't it?
if there's a bad channel in one of the cubes, will it be flagged as nans, or will it be like a uniform field of zeros?
No idea.
Yeah, I don't know either. It could be either, I guess, depending on how it failed.
Yeah.
So sometimes it, well, it may not even necessarily be nans. It could be some outrageously large numbers.
Mm.
If, for example, clean diverged and did something wacky. Craig would probably know, because I think he's actually been looking at stuff that comes out of the pipeline.
Yeah.
If it has an RMS of zero or something large, then you can probably just
yeah, I think taking the average of the cube, I don't think it's just too big. Like, since I'm just going to look at a single channel, try and quickly determine if it's a bad channel or not.
Okay. Yeah, I guess you could just take a representative sniff of the central few pixels or something.
Yeah.
That amused me more than I would like to admit.
Anyone know offhand what the center of the hull field is? Like the position?
What do you mean?
Which one?
The one with all the beams. That's what we'd be looking at in the BW5 folder.
Five years early.
It's Rax, isn't it?
Yeah, the Rax test BW5 folder. Yeah.
There's lots of field centers then.
There's a whole bunch of beams.
Depends on what you're looking at.
Yeah, I just been love them.
The middle of the whole shebang.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Cool. I will eyeball the header of the Linmos, and that will tell me.
Yes, that will tell you. Yeah.
I just thought of that while I was asking.
Yeah, the CR pick should be defined at the center of the image.
Yeah. The trick is to
should ask. Be right.
Yeah, it doesn't necessarily have to, because you can't actually have it as a corner pixel, and it just depends on.
It should say by the CR picks though, right, or something like that. One of them should say.
Yeah.
Anyway, the trick is to like partially download the file and then just kill it, and you can just still look at the header. Because it downloads sequentially. It's really good.
Yeah, I think if it always comes from the same software package, you can probably make that assumption.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes they...
Rather than waiting 3 days for this to download.
To other things. Because I think some optical packages, they assume it's...
A corner.
The reference pixel is a corner or something.
Yeah, because corners... When you go to do a reprojection, if it's in the corner, then things go super weird. The thing is that KViz doesn't care, but pretty much everything else wants it in the center.
Because I think if you use WCS, it should come out in the watch. But if the software just makes certain assumptions, then it can't get it horribly wrong if it doesn't use all the information that's in the header. Sound like we need to lie down somewhere. There is a room just...
The first aid room.
Yeah.
Don't think I'm in need of emergency attention.
I might try to give you CPR.
It's the closest thing enough, to be honest. What we should be asking is whether those stickers that they give you now when you're a guest, we should be asking if those are recyclable. And if not, who do we think we are? Littering the planet
with stickers.
Yeah.
I should show you the one that my son printed out.
Sierra Valley.
Using the Envoy system, you mean?
Yeah,
but I guess check the CR picks as well to see where it's defined.
CR picks 1 is 6.6 times 10 to the 3.
CR picks 1?
Mm.
And what? How many pixels are there? That sounds roughly in the center.
Nexus. Something.
So twice that?
I'm looking for it. It's 12,000.
Sounds roughly like twice times six.
Find it.
You're right, it does. All right, that sounds good. Now you just got to find the actual things. Yeah. There we go.
You read my mind. I was going to put O in. I was just like, oh, hold on. The reason for visit.
I have nowhere else to go. Oh. You're right. You are my last option.
I brought my son in during school holidays because he just... had to look after him.
Yeah.
So he had to go through this thing to get the tag. And his reason for visit was, have nowhere else to go.
Okay.
Mass caps are 36 square degrees, field of view.
Roughly.
About 6x6. Cool.
Powers of six flying around everywhere.
Oh,
yeah.
When I was doing, because I was using the, trying to get useful information out of the bandpass observation, and that's even more nuts because you got the 36 beams, 36 antennas. And it does 36 scans because it tries to put 934 in each one of those. So it's just 36 all over the place. And you get it in the right index at the right time.
Let's see.
Why are the beams numbered like that?
That's a good question.
Reminds me of the Ethernet port wiring back at where I used to live.
It's obfuscation.
Yeah.
Protect the innocent or guilty.
It's definitely the corners, I think, that give us the biggest garbage.
Which wouldn't be surprising because that had the least number of elements to contribute towards.
Oh, true, indeed. Yeah. And also, the optical distortions are largest.
Yes. The worst of both worlds.
Yeah, it's the worst of both. Andrzejczyk, reason for visiting. I have nowhere else to go.
Did he say this?
No. There is a machine learning collinium today.
Yes.
Hmm. boy, yeah. I hadn't been paying attention to this thread, but yeah. Jesus, at some point, David's just like, right, I'm publishing a paper now.
Well, the thing that was awkward, so you'll see there was one point where I said, he asked a question. I said, well, look, I don't know. I'll have to check with Shiv because I'm in the busy week.
Mm.
And then he asked, a bit further up, he said, oh, if Shiv's already done the processing, he should be writing the paper.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't think twice about that. Got mm-hmm. to that point, and then he says, oh, I'll email Shiv directly mm-hmm. if that's okay. And at that point, that was when I went out for a coffee.
Mm.
And then I saw Shiv, and he was just pale. And I'm you probably wouldn't have seen David's email.
No.
But it was effectively, I'm writing a paper. Can you give me give me the data? And of course, Shiv doesn't see any of this. And even if he did, I saw all that. And I was kind of surprised by the email.
Yeah.
So I think that's what caused a lot of the confusion and stress and angst. And
yeah. Is it all resolved now, or is it still in an uncomfortable situation?
I think it's somewhat resolved. So David's still writing the paper.
Is
it? Shiv's going to be second author.
Whoa.
But that's just basically going to be.
What would David do?
So
he didn't do anything, right? Is it true? Well.
Fair
enough.
Yeah, I don't.
Sorry.
So there was a lot of investigation into optical type stuff because initially there was some thought it might be flare star, even though the percentage polarization didn't seem quite right for that.
Yeah.
Anyway, there was a lot of confusion, but hopefully it's all
resolved. Yeah, okay. That's fine. Sorry.
Yeah, so the idea is that the first paper will just be a discovery paper
mm-hmm.
of
mm-hmm.
that source, but then the subsequent one will be more the details of the pulsar.
Mm.
Anyway, it was a bit of confusion all around.
Right. That's where all these problems come from, really, is just, you know.
Communication.
Yeah, communication falls down for one reason or another, basically. So,
I mean, partially was my fault because I didn't tick all the boxes when I was investigating, you know, how to follow it up, things like that.
Oh.
I was the mystery source.
Oh, right, yeah.
Well, not so mystery anymore.
Yeah, not anymore. Did you have Emil, did you know the ASCAP OBS IDs that Tara was asking for?
Yeah, I posted it on the Slack
channel. Okay, good.
Yep.
Do you know what form bad channels take in the images that come out of, or cubes that come out of ASCAPsoft?
What form they take?
Yeah, there's a question.
Well, I was just about to do a check to see if the central 10 pixels, if their RMS was either not greater than zero or had nans in it.
Uh-huh.
So if it
or zero.
Yeah, or zero.
Because if they're all zeros, then...
Yeah, so as in, so if the RMS is not greater than zero.
Yeah. Yeah, what, just exclude that from RM synthesis, is that what
you... Oh, no, I was for making a quick image of it. Because if they're nans, they should automatically be included from synthesis in RM tools.
Yeah. Sorry, I don't know, what are you trying to do?
Trying to do a faster way of making a quick picture of it. That doesn't require as long to open up in something like KVIS.
This is a collapsed image. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, the cubes are just collapsing along the direction. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So which channels to exclude from that? Is that the...
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so... yeah, I'd exclude... Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right. Like anything that...
Yeah.
Yeah. Is zero or...
Has nan or is a nan.
Yeah, or is nans. Yeah. Yep. Yeah, I think...
I guess you could just check if it's zeros and just fill it with nans and just do a nan function.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing.
Yeah.
I'm just basically checking the first channel. If that's bad, checking 10 channels later.
Yep.
Just because, yes, squishing it was just taking away, like, it, I think there's currently issues with the AstroPy claiming to be memmapped. Well, I think that array is memmapped. But as soon as you pass it to NumPy, then it tries to read it into memory or certain NumPy functions.
A big thing.
That's like one of the Linmos. It's like 120 something gigs.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. 115.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that won't fit in
memory. Enough to worry about.
Yeah. Yeah.
More than enough to worry about.
Yeah. Which is frustrating, like, but an alternate solution, although it seems to be a pain, would like to create a new NumPy memmap file, but then you have to read in all the data and then write it to a new file, and that's also just incredibly slow.
So does it cause this problem even if you just take the central?
No, I am just about to test that. That shouldn't be an issue now, I'm hoping.
Well, it'll still be a problem when you're trying to scrunch it together, I guess.
Yeah, so I'm not scrunching it anymore, I'm just looking at a single channel.
Oh, okay. So you're just trying to find a channel that looks sensible?
Yeah.
It shouldn't be so hard.
Yeah.
Why don't I just have a terabyte of memory in there?
Yeah,
it's easy. Then the images will be 5 terabytes.
It seems kind of a missed... don't know the full inner workings of AstroPy, but that it doesn't create a NumPy memmapped array. It's just its own memmapping function.
Maybe you're actually going to go like C on this.
Probably, yeah.
Let's see if it's O.
Be nice knowing you.
Yeah. No, I'm not. I mean, if you're willing to take up the task, I won't stop you.
I know, I used to do all my stuff in C and then move to Python. And now each time I go in C again, it's like, oh, crap, do I have to define that again? I really can't.
Piece of junk.
You can do things very powerful, I mean, very quickly. Oh, gosh, trying to get everything defined that you need just to be able to do that. Half the battle now. One line of Python is like a gazillion lines of C. And the worst thing of all is when you spend all that effort trying to write in C and then realize, oh, it's not that much faster anyway, because the if you use an umpire library effectively, it can actually be very efficient.
Yeah.
So anyway, you're looping stuff that things go pear-shaped.
Well, that worked. That was quick.
Oh, cool. Did it work, though?
Well, it worked on the Fornax AQ, but that didn't die last time.
Oh, okay.
So I'll test it on one of these Linmos things to see.
It is pretty crazy that these tools aren't more clever about how they access FITS, because FITS is a very well structured format, for, at least for images. It should be really easy to slice and dice stuff.
Yeah. Well, slicing it's fine, but just when you go to average it up, that's the issue, because it tries to... Or square it even, you know, it tries, some of those functions in there try to read it into memory. Although I think...
If you could do it in quadrants or, you know... That should work too, as long as you go under the limit of your memory.
Yeah. But it's frustrating that, you know, AstroPy has this, like, memmap functionality, but then it doesn't get passed on to NumPy.
Yeah.
Even though it creates a NumPy array when you read it.
Probably need to disappear at 11 at Nace's meeting.
Ah, right.
Okay. Time has changed. I'm trying to at least set up the 8142 data set again.
Mm-hmm.
Got it to the point where it's calibrated, but now I need to split off into different fields.
Mm.
Before I can start imaging it.
Right.
Of course, that was with a 0.9 pitch.
Mm.
That data was with a 0.9 pitch as opposed to the 1 point, whatever they used for the actual racks or more recent racks.
Yeah, 1.05, I think.
I always forget what it is. I can never remember which one they wanted to have and which one they ended up with.
Oh,
because they couldn't get what they wanted.
Oh.
Because of weather.
Because of what?
Weather.
Oh.
Because they can only do the
beamforming. When it's not raining.
Yes.
Right.
Certain of irony that you have to look at the sun, but you can't do it if it's raining.
Even though it's radio.
Yes. It's the optical bit of it that's the dangerous bit.
How wide are the individual beams again? Half a degree? Radius? So, the beam, sorry. One beam is half a degree.
No. You mean the forward radius. Half maximum?
Yeah.
Oh, no, it's 1.7, was it?
Wide?
Yeah.
No, it's 1.8.
In the low bit.
Forward half max is 0.88. Is what tapes like yesterday, I think. Is that right?
No, it's a full width half maximum, 1.7. It's
really? Oh, maybe he's the same as a half width then.
Yeah, maybe that's half width. I mean, because at the high end of the band, it's like 1 degree
mm-hmm.
full width half maximum.
Mm-hmm.
That's why they had the 1 degree
pitch.
But at the low end of the band, it's actually quite a big beam. Where did he say that? He posted that somewhere, didn't he?
Mm.
That was just after you posted the 1.76 degrees
mm-hmm.
or 0.88 degrees radius.
Yeah. Hey, Lex. the resources and everything.
Oh my god.
What have I done?
Yeah, what have you done?
Wow.
Get your face colors and your edge colors mixed up.
Yeah. <It's> like, well, I haven't done anything, so that's...
God, this is slow as...
So here's an example for one of the Linmos fields. So like the one that this produces the, so this is Q squared for the first channel. And that's quite a little bit faster than trying to read it into K bits.
I'm trying to get it to plot the...
And again, I'm trying to figure out what's the source and what's the mark on the screen.
For each of these things, so we can cycle through. It should be fine, except I need to flip east and west.
Alex, did you say Motley was okay at the moment?
I'm not promising that.
Well, you're not going to be promising that for long. Yeah.
Hey, I'm trying to run clean, but it doesn't seem to be progressing.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure this is disk stuff.
Yeah.
Rather than CPU stuff. We have some issues.
Yeah. Since you say that, but do you think it's issue with Myrtle then?
It's got to be Myrtle.
Mm.
Like, everyone at Stromo is hammering Myrtle 2 at the moment. So if you're going to be running clean on like a Linmos, the Linmos or something, we should get those images onto the disk that's on that server.
Yeah.
Did you manage to get like the Mosaic across or anything though?
No. I'm testing on Craig's Fornax.
Yes, you can get it on the Mash Malice or
Model. Yeah, I'm going to try Malice.
But I don't think it's... I don't think it's the CPU is my point.
Mm.
Also, Malice's CPU is slow enough that it's better to just run it on Mash even with Margaret. Like, genuinely. I would ping IT and see if they can... Or do you have an allocation on Mash?
A space allocation?
Yeah.
No.
I might, actually.
I mean, I could try it on Avatar.
You could. I have an allocation on Mash. Think.
I mean, the data are small enough I could put it in my home directory.
Is that... What server is that on, though?
That's true.
You do have an allocation on Mash.
What's it under?
Hey, Thompson. Your name. There's nothing in it.
No. There you go, I've got one, yay. Although, it just took forever to log into Mash.
Do you have one on the others?
Yeah, Mash is pretty cool.
There's nothing in your Malice, and there's nothing in your Motley. Oh, you don't have a Motley.
Alright, try it on a Malice.
Try it on Malice's data server. I reckon that'll fix it.
What is it? Slash Malice?
It's slash data slash.
Slash data.
Malice. Apparently there's no quotas on there, so IT might just get mad at you for copying to it, but like, ask for forgiveness and permission. They still haven't replied to my ticket.
Yeah.
Nice. So everything bad is
right at the edges.
Right at the edges,
yeah.
Which is good,
except for that pulsar. Yeah. What's that blue one? Is in the middle of
that. Probably is it. I would say.
Yeah. Cool. That's not like hiding things, is it?
No. This color map makes things you see what I mean?
Yeah.
Let's see if I can find a better one that doesn't make things white.
That's funny. Like the value. One of the key colors in the color map is the same as the background. I remember one of the lessons that Robert Brown taught me was never have green at a key part of your color map, because the human eye isn't very good at distinguishing different shades of green.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, cape is.
Right. That color of green you can really distinguish. But like variations in green are hard to pick out, and so for whatever reason. So if you have some part of the color map where you need to be able to see details and it's green, then that's the wrong color map. Even disregarding color blindness.
That's weird looking.
Laptop looks quite a lot like mine, actually.
All those beams that aren't the first one we copied are truncated XPS, by
the new one.
Yeah, this one
a
is
megabyte.
A couple of years old now.
Mm, okay, but it doesn't have.
I have no idea if that's an R.
Yeah, it does.
Oh, it's there
down there, which is the most horrible place for a webcam to be.
Yeah, this one. So this year.
Oh yeah,
it's up there.
Oh well, that's a bit better. Your upper bezel is slightly wider.
I know, it's depressingly wide, isn't it?
Yeah, shocking. How can you tolerate it?
I don't know. I stare at it all the time.
But anyway, I'm having success running it on Zeus, so.
Cool.
Zeus?
It would be super useful to be able to get cut out.
Yeah. That data didn't copy across.
What? Resumed.
If you wanted to try running your magical scripts in something stupid big, I've got Matt Whiting's ASCAP simulation on the MASH data already.
Yeah.
In data /MASH/ALGA. It's got the restored images in QU.
Where just sitting there?
Yeah, it's just sitting in there.
All right.
They are a bit big.
Let's give this a go.
Yeah. The model.fits, by the way, is 8,096 pixels wide and a bunch of channels. Because that's the whole model.
Yeah.
It's kind of gross. It's a bit better.
Mm-hmm.
So that might work.
Okay, so a few scattered around. What's the size?
Size is it could be, yeah, that's a good point. But the size is the distance from the closest beam center.
Okay.
So the further they are away from their closest individual beam, the larger the point will be.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Color is the override.
Mm. Right, so yellow and blue, black are worst.
Yep.
And red is okay.
Yep.
What's the limit set? I can't quite
read. 1%.
1%.
Yep.
Oh, okay.
So everything yellow is 1% or higher. Everything blue is minus 1% or lower.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and everything purplish is well below that. So most things in the middle are quite okay.
It seems. I see.
Good. That's all. Just
yeah. Let me come out again.
Excellent.
So it's all right, we should be done. As in, I just look at the first channel. If the first channel isn't bad,
get a hold of these.
The first channel is bad. Go to the tenth channel.
Try and see if we can do some cross matching before and after comparos. Right.
Mm-hmm. Oh, cool. Is this, what's this one?
This is just the first channel of this is ASCAP Sim.
Oh, sweet. That's amazing.
That's a good plot.
So just
plot
like that a on quick the, check.
Slack. Do you think you could run a large-ish convolution on it to get a like a really dodgy blur, I mean? So well, you can see things.
The thing is, my trick has been to not pass anything too big to NumPy because NumPy reads it into memory.
Read in the first channel, that should be fine.
Yeah, it's convolve the first channel. Yeah.
Yeah, just convolve the first channel. Yeah. Like, but if you convolve it with like a top hat or something, that'll do the trick. Like it'll get bigger, but it won't look nice, but you'll be able to see the little sources.
Yeah. The other option is whether we make two, like one with log scale and one without.
See, the thing is, log scale is not going to help you if you're looking at it on that scale, right?
Yeah,
like, you can zoom in, and that's cool, and it's actually really cool. But it would also be nice to be able to eyeball, like, a thumbnail, so that you know where the sources are.
Yeah.
Because, especially for a larger image,
this project
like this
Jive.
Yeah. Incidentally, this is what one of the racks
that's the actual
look
official
like
logo.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I have one.
With Scott.
Oh, you have one.
I have one.
Yeah.
Oh, it's over there.
Yeah.
I was talking to somebody from Jive about it. Schultz.
Nice.
Froggy,
it's just a lot worse.
Yeah.
That's cool.
I was talking
that's
to him
really
about
cool.
It. He was like, oh, don't talk to me about the logo. It's awful.
What's that on my screen? What's the source? Zoom in to find out.
Yeah,
it's currently Hal Bjorn. What's his name?
Like
from
like
Mandevelda.
Yeah,
this logo. He's incredibly impressed with it.
So just see my shirt.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's really nice.
I'm real pleased.
So do you have an interpretation for what the axes mean yet?
No. although the further out from you are, the higher the noise. Also, there's like a weird that shape in the worm direction. Yeah. One axis is depth.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'll need to project some complex sources onto it to see.
Before I post this, the width should be multiplied by cosine of deck of the ellipses of the beam.
Yeah.
It doesn't really matter that much.
Don't think so. I think it's only offset RAs need to be multiplied by cosine deck, I think, not not absolute numbers.
Yep. Okay.
Yeah.
Coffee. Good plan.
I better get to the machine first before the whole crowd gets there.
Run.
You've made a terrible mistake.
I know.
So what happened with this thing, with the pulsar?
In what sense?
In terms of the messy stuff that's going on.
You mean the final outcome, or it's just
what happened? I'm sort of out of the loop on all of it.
Oh,
yeah. Probably deliberately so.
Oh no, no, I don't think so.
I mean, like just. I mean, in terms of the any politics. I mean, yeah.
I think partially it was my fault because
right.
I. checked with the guys here because, you know, we have local experts in pulsars. So I thought, do you know if there's a pulsar there? Because I know that they've been looking at Hitrun and all these various other projects. I thought, you know, might as well just check, given that that was talked about in Slack, but not explicitly to check locally. Thing is, I did that and they didn't find anything. And that one thing led to another. And they said, oh, maybe we should do a parks observation. And I thought, okay, that sounds like a great idea. Ultra wide band goes all the way down to our wavelengths. Whereas previous observations were with the multi beam, which was up at 1.4 gigahertz. And then, so they found a candidate with that, which is what I posted. And then, you know, David got excited. Started talking about paper. But then, without any sort of discussion with the guys here, he just said, I'm writing a paper. Can you send me your data? So they were kind of like,
Oh, what? So, just probably needed a bit more forward thought before charging ahead.
On everyone's part. I mean, it was from my part because I already started talking to the guys here. And they, you know, started looking into it probably further than I had initially thought. But by that stage, it was already a bit late. So the suggestion was that I shouldn't have even mentioned where it was. The problem is, how do you tell? How do you check?
How do you get them to check without telling where it is?
So it's awkward.
So
it's that's basically
slightly awkward situation. I mean, the outcome is good. The outcome is we've quickly gotten the pulsar.
And
which is, I think, the politics aside, that's a good thing.
I mean, the other thing was that I guess from my point of view, I would have thought the paper should have been either yourself or Shirdai sort of leading it or being, you know, second author or something like that. Whereas David kind of took control of that. To me, it just didn't seem as fair to those that could probably benefit more from it than in terms of experience and also exposure. But that was just my
opinion. Well, my thinking about it was, I don't have the time to write another paper.
I had exactly the same, because I can't do it. I don't know I don't even know anything about pulsars. I knew that was most likely a pulsar, but apart from that, you know, in terms of, is that a cool thing or not so cool thing? No idea.
I mean, it's related to my sort of previous work that I've done, you know, looking for pulsars
and
stuff. And so that's what Cher's done as well.
That's why I had you in mind as well.
And
both of you had worked on that.
But yeah, I'm okay not leading it.
So I think everyone's going to be on it anyway.
Different order. If you have a dome set, you know, like a
you love your heel tips.
You can get it's a cool project. Result in
the end. But it sounds like now it'll be two papers. So why don't we just talk about the actual detection, and then there'll be one, another one, which is actually looking at the science of the pulsar itself. So looking at, you know, long-term observations, and seeing if it's a binary and things like that. Because there is hints that it might be a binary, but it could also be just measurement error.
This is a pulsar.
It's the topic that seems to come up every
20 minutes.
It really stressed me out at the beginning of the
week.
I felt like I was between a rock and a hard place.
Top hat 2D.
Let me ask a delicate question, Andrew.
Yeah.
I'm not really I'm not at all involved in your sort of ongoing work right now. And I would like to fix that.
Yeah.
I just don't know how best to do that without sort of, you know, making myself a pain in the ass. More than helpful. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, more so than you.
How can I say this delicately? Good point. So if you have any thoughts about that, do let me know, because I would like to be involved in these things.
Yeah. there are a few ideas I had about like iron synthesis with these elliptically polarized bursts we're seeing. I just didn't know whether we had the I'm not familiar with the technique at all. I wasn't sure whether we had the right, you know, signal to noise to do that. Because a linear polarization is like, I mean, it's for some of the bursts we've seen has been like Miller-Jansky level on timescales of 10 minutes. The signal to noise, I'll pull up a... I'll pull up a plot.
Hey, Craig. You're 2015, 16, I literally cannot find the number in 2015, paper with Faraday rotations of 563 extragalactic radio sources.
Yep.
Is that data available somewhere? And by that data, I mean the Faraday spectra.
Nope.
Would it be able, possible,
yes,
to get said data?
It would be.
For reasons.
Yep.
Okay.
No problem at all.
Awesome. I will.
What do you deny?
I deny nothing.
Do you need it now? Or is it...
Not the second, okay, but like soonish would be cool. I want a data set to apply my Faraday complexity method on.
Yep.
And that would be like an ideal one, as there's lots of them. You have an estimate of complexity for them, etc.
Yep. Yeah, that'd be awesome. Yeah, I can get it.
That'd be awesome. Yeah, I just need the spectra.
Yep, no dramas.
Cool, thanks.
You will have the spectra.
Yeah, I'm going to show it at AI and Astronomy in July, so
yeah,
having cool data set would be good.
That'd be cool. Yep, no worries at all. Thanks. I will get them.
Do you want me to bump you later, or...?
Yeah, if I forget the next, like, hour or something. Then
oh, sweet, okay,
yeah. Yeah, I just got to...
What timescale do we work on?
Yeah, yeah. I'll finish this, and then I'll remember where exactly I...
Oh, thanks.
Add the spectra.
Okay, now that plot is probably the best plot that's ever been created.
Which one?
You're about to find out.
You can accompany it with a boom shakalaka exclamation.
Yeah, mate.
It's on the cards.
What's a reasonable panel size?
3.
Yeah.
I guess between
0 and 10.
Maybe like a hundredth of the width of the image. Is that crazy? Is that too big?
You're a madman. Size for what?
And taking Matthew's suggestion and making so in this like quick look thing, involving it with a top hat, can hopefully make real sources pop out.
If you make a square top out, it'll be faster.
There. Sorry, my brain just decided to stop working.
Man, yes. Mine's not even begun working today.
Things have not gone well.
It does any access.
I'll let the boom shakalaka be implicit.
Yeah. Well, there we go. Look at that little inset.
It's pretty good, isn't it? Check that out, Emil. Feast your eyes on this. That's pretty clear which beams are the problematic ones that should be disciplined.
Pause button.
Yeah, where is the... I don't know how to pause it, actually.
Not the best plot, then.
Probably not. I think it's just the viewer that's the problem, not the plot. The plot is, as you know,
God,
the,
I
best.
Yeah.
The best.
So, quite nice. So the outer ring's the full width half maximum extent.
In principle, yeah.
And the inner one is the
just half degree. Yeah, and I put so half degree because I thought, you know, with a pitch of about 1 degree,
right,
it's within that circle that, you know, this. That beam will dominate the mosaic,
yeah,
right? Outside of the circle, it'll be some, well, it'll be some other beam which dominates the mosaic.
Yeah. Okay, so apart from the outer, a couple of outer ones, there's not much in that inner Hmm. Oh, okay, that's another one.
What's the name of this Rax mosaic?
Was it, what?
The name of this Rax mosaic. I'll just say the Rax mosaic.
I think it's called Test 2.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, Rax, call it Rax Test 2.
Yep.
I was actually calling it Test 3 earlier, but I was wrong.
There was a Test 3, but I didn't think that one worked well.
Yeah.
Which is why we don't see any data from Test 3.
All right.
Is it 2 or...
I think every time I've said Test 3 in the past, I actually meant Test 2. So that's
probably
going to be confusing at some point on the track.
What was I doing?
My less than 0. Yes, there they are.
All right, let's...
Withdraw. This is the best plot ever.
That's a good plot.
Jesus, beans are
stretching. Can you call that a plot?
Have you considered putting like a little footprint in the corner? Not for any scientific reason, but just because I would have a little footprint in the corner. That'd be really cool.
Oh,
right.
Oh, wow.
That's cool.
Oh, Cartesian projections, Grace.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, the projection is kind of
ugly.
Yeah. Can't do anything about that, though.
No, you can make use of this. See, it's such a big area of the sky
put in
that we have distortion from Cartesian assumption. Problem solved. It's fine.
So this doesn't... I mean, so this peaks at 1, plus minus 1%.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the mosaic is fixing all this leakage garbage that we've got in the individual beams.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Hmm. There's one pulsar. I think it's towards the just underneath the middle and to the right. It's a blue, moderately sized source there.
And then we talk about 700 square degrees. Yeah, just a little bit to the right and down below.
The
bluish one, is that the one?
I'll point it out.
that thing.
I'm pretty sure that's the pulsar. There's like one actual real source in there.
At least.
Yeah.
Super nice.
Nice.
But it looks like everything inside the mosaic field is within the accepted leakage range.
Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah, it's very clear that it never really gets too far from the beam centers.
And this is for that's for the same data, is it?
Yeah. This is the
test 2.
Yeah. So George has been working with the individual beams.
Right.
And this is just the mosaic. The leakage in the entire mosaic.
Now, is that with the mosaic mosaics or
mosaic.
Or is it just for the individual?
Jenny, or microwave Jenny?
It's for the mosaic.
8675309.
Yeah. Yeah, the full. Yeah, the full.
Jenny.
I think so. It's like as in the individual footprints, you mean?
All right.
Yeah. I think so. George, this is the full. The gene was run on the full mosaic, not the individual footprints, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah.
Well, we could do that too.
Yeah.
What we have.
Yeah. So we've looked at individual beams and the whole mosaic and not individual footprints yet.
That's right. And one of the things I would like
to... So many layers.
Although this one is interleaved.
Like an ogre.
Yes.
It is interleaved, yeah. So one of the things that we definitely have to do is make whole area mosaics with A and B interleaves only.
So I had A and B images in my original
book. I'm going to for Stokes View as well.
Okay. Not for Stokes View.
So, but I can do that too. I just have to remember if it's the odds are A or the evens are A or whatever. Because I think it goes like the A ones are like field 0, 2, 4, 6.
Oh, you mean the actual number? Oh,
aren't they?
Because I renamed them so that you have A right. on the end.
Oh, I see. Right. Yeah, I was not anywhere near that clever. Yet. I can make some symbolic links. So. Oh, do you have to run off?
Yeah.
Ooh, the old Isha's meeting.
Yes.
Should also run off.
Okay. So Brian and Brian wanted to
have a good discussion.
Chat now as well.
Okay. Maybe I'll just apology for today then. Can you pass all my apologies out?
Depends on how much conversation we have now. Hi, Brian.
Yeah, I might join later.
Hello.
We may not have much of a the conversation may not be very long at this point, actually. I'm not sure.
Yes, sir.
No, I don't think it'll be very long.
Okay. What was the topic of conversation?
Well, so the task assigned to me was to figure out how best to use the MBSS data as part of the validation. So I just wanted to close the loop on that now that I've finally downloaded some data and done some process.
Great. Oh, yes, we want to wait for Jennifer to connect, I think, right? Or is she on, actually?
I think Shannon has just joined. She was going to present some stuff as well, I think.
Great.
I don't know how to get a non-Vim editor on Zeus.
Yeah, VI.
I said non.
You said Vim.
Once I don't start with V or I.
Does that nano?
Does that nano or Emacs?
Oh, that's really? Weird.
What about Joe?
Pico.
Ah. Pico.
Is it Pico? No, Pico not found.
Edit.
G edit?
X edit.
edit opens Vim. Oh no!
What about G edit?
Try X edit.
Just use VI like a normal person.
You could probably just download Nano and put it in your. That's what I did with DSLE.
I'll just do it on Galaxy because that has Emacs.
Oh my god! What's wrong with Vim anyway? It's powerful and sleek.
Those are words that I don't associate with them.
Can VI send your emails?
I'm sure it can.
with the right plugin. Send emails without ever having to touch the mouse.
Mm-hmm. Just need to be a keyboard wizard.
Why don't we hang out a bit until Craig comes back and then get started? Is that okay with you guys?
Yeah.
Okay.
Convolve _ FFT.
Yeah, I should put that stuff under. I should see if I can revive some code that I've got for doing this kind of analysis with 1D.
Yep.
Datasets.
Just looking for.
Yeah, we talked about this by email at one point, didn't we?
I think so. Yeah. Looking for the name of this plot. Drowning in plots with this.
Python 3, please.
We couldn't be more different. I use Python 2 and VI.
It's Python 3 and Vim.
Actually, I use Vim, I have to say.
Yeah, okay. Well, the good news is I found all my missing NVSS sources. I forgot to change the limit of number of rows returned.
So this is one of the bursts that happened in COBOL.
Oh, yeah. Huge amount of structure in there.
Yeah. The problem is that we couldn't calibrate for Q and V.
Oh.
But I would the XY phase couldn't be calibrated for. So Q and V had to be added in quadrature.
Mm-hmm.
But we've got U, and you can see there's this really, like, this weird structure in.
Yeah.
Which of these sources? This drifting.
Yeah, it's drifting, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's cool.
I don't really know how to interpret that. Maybe as a time dependent source, a time dependent linear polarization angle that's getting Faraday rotated. So this is time.
Yeah.
That's
that sounds reasonable. Okay, let's come back to that.
Yeah.
All right, Brian, I'm gonna hand over to you.
Okay, so the task on me was to assess whether the NVSS, how we use the NVSS data as part of our validation. And I guess it wasn't quite clear whether we meant general validation for the full survey, or whether we just meant trying to sort of explore informally the data we have and seeing whether they're any good or not. So I written a script which figures out where the image is and figures out which NVSS sources are in it. It takes the brightest NVSS sources and then computes the basic polarization properties at those pixels. And I've done it for about 5 beams now. I'll just share my screen. So you can see my screen. And so here is the main plot of RM versus RM. And the problem is that the RMs are always sort of 20 plus or minus 10, so it's sort of really hard to say. It doesn't look too bad, I mean, but it's sort of hard to say. Plotting the two polarizations against each other, percent polarizations, they both seem to sort of crudely correlate. Plotting the polarized fluxes against each other, there's something weird going on here. These 4 all seem to line up in a line, and that one is over there, so I'm not sure what's going on there. But there's endless beams you can do this to. Here's another one. I guess this just means the RMs are all about 25-ish. The errors have been computed here, so what's interesting is that the ASCAP errors are very small, as we'd hope. These are bright sources, and the RMs errors are about 1 or less, which is probably going to be limited by systematics involving leakage and ionospheric calibration and so on. Again, polarized fraction comparison. Certainly when one is the highly polarized sources are highly polarized sources, but there's not a great relationship there. And you can keep going. This one's not doesn't have a lot of sources in it, and the relationship doesn't seem to be very good. And so on and so on. I've got a few others I haven't posted yet. So firstly, my first question was, Q and U seem to be flipped again. Is that correct, or is that problem supposed to have been fixed now?
No, it hasn't been fixed. So yes, still should be flipped.
That's fine, as long as that's what we're expecting. So the question is, and this is just sort of one Jennifer has these nice set of diagnostics, and I presume that early on, particularly in the pilot survey, we're not going to be automating any of the quality control. We're going to have to look at each field by hand and have some sort of check sheet. We can farm this out to lots of different people, but we'll have a clear check sheet where you sort of fill out some spreadsheet that sort of says what tests it passed and what it doesn't. So the question is, how should this be incorporated into that? I was chatting briefly to Jennifer earlier today, and you know, we suggested that just the script that grabs the NVSS or the SPAR sources just should be part of the diagnostic plots, and that one can look at that and use that as part of an assessment as to whether the data are any good or not. But beyond that, I'm not sure what we can really do because, I should say that these per beam files are only about 7 or 8 square degrees each. So in a full ASCAP pointing, you'd obviously get quite a few more sources. But unless you're in a region where the RMs are large and the errors are small, the NVSS RMs are always going to be ambiguous.
Hmm.
I guess I can say a couple of things. One is more general, that I think that a lot of the POTS people are posting, I think there's some of them I think that will be useful in general for being part of the validation scripts. So I've always had in my head this distinction between validation and what I call verification, which is like the verification are the things we want to do now, and then validation is the ongoing things. So separating those two and figuring out which things we need to do on an ongoing basis all the time. I think that something like this script should be included, and we should have some kind of summary plot if there's other RM sources available, and then it can be up to whoever the validator is to make the decision whether it's reliable or not. I think that's my general take on it, but I don't know if others agree with that. I mean, until we decide they're not useful at all, and then we could remove them if we want to.
Yeah, I guess we probably want to have initially many things that we then sort of can, you know, as we go along, figure out which things we're actually referring to and using.
Yep.
Yeah, I think the racks, well, I was going to say the rack survey would be a good test for this, but I don't actually know that that's true because it's going to be so shallow that it's probably going to have a lot less. The diagnostics and racks are going to be different, but the pilot survey for sure will be, I think, a good test of what that want to include.
And I guess presumably it'll be the case at some point that, you know, once racks is done, finished, cataloged and all, and understood, that it will become a reference for, you know, the validation that happens later. Right?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Yeah, that will make life much easier because then we'll actually have queues and U's that we can compare and all the rest of it.
Yeah. Speaking of which, Brian, those NVSS comparisons that you showed, did you look at the spectra from the racks? From the ASCAP data in comparison?
Yeah.
And they look reasonable, do they?
I mean, the RMs are all pretty low, but yeah, they look reasonable. I mean, I can show a couple now if you want to see them.
Yeah, I'm just curious because I'm thinking of, I mean, the point that Larry keeps on making is that, you know, when we look at the derived quantities, we're kind of making an assumption that the underlying data are reasonable. Probably bears checking from time to time.
Okay. The one I have up right now is a G23 field, not a Rax field, so it's not ideal. But here's the outputs of RM synthesis. So you can see a nice, I mean, there's some complexity here, but you can see it looks like there's two components, but you can see a nice sort of position angle swing and everything sort of looks sensible there. I haven't run RM clean on it, but again, it looks like there are two components, this particular one. Yeah, this one's quite complicated. Again, something quite complicated going on, but a nice central peak in the RM spectrum. It's a bit messy. But there's a nice peak, but quite broad.
Mm.
There's another nice one.
Ooh.
But again, some strange RM spectra there.
Yeah.
That's this. Here's a really nice one.
That's a good symptom.
That is a beautiful spectrum.
That one looks very nice.
Fantastic looking source.
Behold. This one's quite noisy, but there's still an angle swing and a nice peak. So yeah, the spectra don't look too bad.
No, it looks pretty good actually.
Yeah. This is a G23.
Ooh.
What's your max RM on those, Brian?
The biggest RM. Looks like it goes between about minus 30 and 30.
Hmm.
I'm curious because we get that wobble introduced by the new XY phase calibration.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm guessing that it presents itself at some high RM value.
Well,
yeah.
If it was also present in the QNU.
Could it,
and it won't just be one RM value, it'll be some sort of, or manifest as some sort of Faraday thick component because it doesn't go with lambda squared.
Mm.
Maybe we can add a wiggle into the simulations and just look at what it does.
Yeah, I think that's worth doing at some point.
I'll do that now. I've got nothing better to do while the GN runs.
Okay.
Aaron Chippendale seems quite bullish on the prospects of being able to null this out, essentially, so hopefully he can use his sorcery to get rid of it.
There was an update on that, wasn't there? That he had some... Didn't he send a message yesterday about, you know, some sort of half solution?
He was talking about it. I didn't... Yes, something involving time gating of the something or other, and I didn't understand it, so I... I'd like to go and talk to him about it.
Okay.
Sounds like something out of Back to the Future.
Yeah, yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if Aaron's got a few of those sort of tricks up his sleeve.
Yeah, you just have to drive. Just have to drive ASCAP at 88 miles an hour.
cool.
Excellent.
So one other thing I can do is to find a Salen field to sort of test out the SPAS data because we haven't looked at those at all yet. But I don't really know which of the RAX beams actually correspond to somewhere south. Like, I don't know if that information exists.
I do have it somewhere. For one of the... Yeah. Let me get back to you on that.
There'll
be quite a folder.
There's SPAS sources in the 1006 field, but... Is that what the question was?
I just want to know if any of the RAX fields have SPAS sources.
I guess I should.
So, by the way, I've just pulled up some RAX data to show you what the polarization looks like for the RAX data. So here's just, this is beam 23.
Beam 23.
So you can see the angles there are pretty funky. Cool. Very strange angle behavior. So I don't know if that's real. I mean, it's not just random. There's the Qs and Us and some complicated behavior in QU space. It gives you, not surprisingly, a rather complicated spectrum. Here's another one with sort of a ratty angle dependence and but a nice peak. This one's pretty flat, clear peak. Another pretty ratty one, but a nice peak. These are all progressively getting fainter, but that one's pretty good. And this one's just garbage.
Somebody in that galaxy is going, aww.
This one's not bad. That one's rubbish.
Wow.
Ooh.
That one's rubbish.
Ooh.
That one's almost rubbish. So they're getting fainter and fainter as you go down. But you can see the bright ones. I mean, the bright ones are not very bright. They're only a few millijanskis. But there are some reasonable ones in there. I mean, that seems okay to me.
Yeah.
So nothing as pretty as the ones we were looking at before, which we had picked out the very brightest ones and over quite a large field of view. But this is quite a small field.
Cool. Alrighty.
So the RACs, what are the RACs fields? Is that just one RACs pointing?
Depends on what you're looking at, honestly. Which one were you just looking at? You said beam 23, but from what?
Possum that was beam 23, but in the directory RAX test BW5, is all of that just one pointing?
Yeah, that's one pointing.
Just one 30 square degree field.
That's right. Yeah, because that's what Julie processes on.
So I do have... there's 150 gig files that cover the full field, but I guess I had a couple of questions about that. One was that the Stokes U was only a 5K file, and you said that that was going to be fixed. What is the difference between image.i and image.restored.i?
Oh, image.i is the clean components. That's what you guys were looking at earlier this week. And restored is the restored map. Yeah.
Okay, so until we get that revised restored map, we can't really do anything with the full field.
Yeah, I guess not. Yeah. Yeah, because the mosaic can fall over, and I don't think it's been fixed in the meantime. Now, for the earlier tests, and that field anyway is up in the NVSS region, I think, if I remember right.
Yeah, it's about minus 30.
Yeah. We've got stuff from, other racks, test observations. But maybe not in cube form. I think the cubes that we created have all been up in the NVSS region, I think. Deliberately, so we had NVSS to compare against.
Yeah, I guess there is SPAS data up around minus 30, so I can look at that too.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's just the pain that the SPAS data aren't in Visio, which just sort of makes it harder to search them.
Yeah.
So
one of the postdocs.
Go ahead, George.
I'll just say, just a sentence, which is just that one of the postdocs in Perth has just reformatted that catalog. Because there's like the two components in it per source or something like that in some random order. So it's been reformatted just so it's in an order where you can actually use it a bit more directly.
PS pass data?
Yeah, I'm not sure if that's going to be useful more broadly. But.
Yeah, I think it probably would be.
Yeah. All right, sorry, Cameron.
What is it? Does some sources have multiple entries in the catalog, do they?
I think they all do. I think they all got two fit components or something like that, even if they didn't need it. but then they right. were in, I don't know, they weren't like in a ranked order. They're just in some random order. So you couldn't always take a particular column and use it because it sometimes contained effectively junk, was my understanding. Right. Not having done it myself, this is what I was told. So
That's annoying.
Yeah, so I guess the question I wanted to ask is, so I have been compiling a master catalog of rotation measures. Would that be useful as sort of the catalog to be compared to this? Because it does include other catalogs that have been published, usually over smaller areas. But for those test fields, like as a validation system, for those fields that do have more dense previous observations, that might provide more sources to compare against. But I could think that maybe a counter argument for that is that catalog suddenly is a lot more complicated. We have RMs from different frequencies, many different types of observations, and so it's harder to know what we're comparing against.
Mm. And it sounds like the complications might make it too scattered.
Yeah, I thought I'd put that out there, see what people
thought. Yeah, no, it's a good point, and maybe we'll have to come back to it later.
Yeah. Well, it might be useful to see that, if you filter on a particular survey, but at least it's one catalog that has all the surveys there, right? Like, yeah. Data set to the query, but you can filter based on whatever survey you're interested in comparing to, or have a list of surveys that you interested in, right?
Yeah.
Say, if the source is NVSS or SPAS, then accepted.
Yeah. And how is that presented in the catalog? There's a column, presumably, that tells you what survey the entry came from, right?
Yeah.
It's not merged per source or something, is it? Like every entry is every entry from the source catalogs are also a single entry in the merged catalog as well, I guess?
Yeah. I think what I've done also for sources that have more than one component, so that would be like the SPAS that have two fitted components, they then have two entries in the catalog, in the merged catalog.
Right.
So every identified RM component exists as a separate row.
Yeah, I mean, in that case, I definitely agree with Jennifer that, you know, it's better to have the whole thing and, you know, just select out the parts that you need for any given purpose.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I've been meaning to circulate sort of the test version to see what people think. This gives me more incentive to do that sooner rather than later. Okay.
Good. Anything else to chat about?
No, it's as long as you're happy with that sort of being an outcome of this, that we'll just fold it into the diagnostic plots that Jennifer's generating.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, I can have a look at incorporating your code into what I've done. So.
Good. George, is it right that we were sort of hoping that this would sort of be a very clear diagnostic, that the RMs would all sort of line up, or they'd all sort of be all over the place?
Yeah. I mean, I guess what we really need is a way to quantify this, actually, right? I mean, a plot is a plot, that's fine, but, you know, I mean, one of the key aspects of Jordan's script anyway was that there was numbers and green boxes and red boxes, depending on how the numbers were, whether they were in range or not. So, you know, should we be calculating a degree of correlation or something between the RMs or what?
I'm just not sure. I mean, we can, but I think it should only just be as a guide. I don't think we should set any sort of firm criterion based on it, because sometimes the MBSS data just seem a bit crappy.
Yeah. But, I mean, those plots that you showed before. Oh, sorry, Jennifer. Go ahead.
Sorry. I was just going to say, I think it would be good to calculate some kind of number, but also show the plot with the number. And then, you know, as we get more data, we can figure out if our number is reasonable or maybe adjustment needed, right?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, for those ones you showed before, Brian, I mean, they're not terrible. They're also not like as good as we were maybe hoping for, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I think it'll be hard to tell the difference between one that's sort of within the errors and one where things haven't worked at all, because the RMs are all so small that they'd look pretty similar. I suspect if I plotted the RMs from one field, if I mix it up so you've got the RMs from one NBSS field comparing it to a different ASCAP field, you'd probably find it hard to tell the difference.
Right.
So my sense is this isn't, I mean, I guess it should be a semi check, and if the RMs are just completely rubbish, then we should do something about it, and we should make this plot, but often it might not be that insightful, other than just to demonstrate that nothing has gone horribly wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, these are all, as I said, these are one beams over the full image. You'll get more sources and you get a bigger spread in RMs and you'll be able to see more of a trend.
All right.
Okay.
Good. I think that's all good.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thanks, folks.
Thank you. Have a good night.
All right. See you later.
Yep. Talk to you tomorrow or whatever.
Yep. Bye.
Bye.
I should have said something before everyone left, but I just wanted to make one more comment, and it was that there's all of these leakage plots that people have been posting, and I think having one of those would be useful on the validation script. But I don't, whatever one that we, I need to look through them, and but if anyone, you know, has seen a plot and they think this would be a really good plot to do for every field, then kind of point that out to me, that would be good.
Mm-hmm.
like a style of plot, or if I've seen there's a lot of messages on Slack, but I haven't had a chance to really look through it. So
yeah, I think one like the one that Andrew just posted is probably going to be great for that purpose.
The per footprint, right?
Per footprint, yeah.
Yeah, indeed. Rather than a whole mosaic, because
yeah, and I mean, if you have code that you're willing to share, then that would be
great.
Yeah.
Yep. It's fairly straightforward stuff, so.
Yeah.
Good.
No worries.
All right. Why isn't this being squeezed?
So these wiggles that Larry talked about, they show up in I, and if they show up in Q, then they should appear as something in the RM spectrum, Faraday spectrum, that's the word I'm looking for. Is that right?
Say what?
Wiggles?
Wiggles, yep.
We don't want wiggles.
We don't want wiggles, indeed.
Cool. Wiggles might be in Q and U?
Yes.
Cool. If the wiggles are in Q and U, would they be the same in Q and U?
Presumably, yeah.
Okay, cool. So a constant offset. Sorry, a con... That's... The same offset, which is that sinusoid. Log sinusoid.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's basically if you put a wiggle, an extra rotation of a few percent.
Yeah.
With a, you know, periodicity of 24 megahertz or whatever it is.
Yeah, is that 24?
Something like that.
Sure.
But like Craig pointed out, is that it's a wiggle in frequency, like a sinusoid in frequency rather than a sinusoid in lambda squared.
Yes. Yeah. I have plopped in, well, it's a sinusoid in log frequency.
Well.
According to Larry's plot, unless I'm misinterpreting Larry's plot, which I could be.
No, I think it's a sinusoid in frequency.
And it's just like at a linear spot of the log. Cool.
You don't have much of a span in log space.
Can do. Oh, yeah, true.
So the thing that, jumping back to
UV-SETI,
the thing that this thing reminded me of, there was this paper in 95 looking at the Stokes polarization of Jupiter, and they see sort of similar, like, banding in the dynamic spectra. So this is... U over R1. There was a better plot somewhere. Anyway, so that isn't real, that's just... So that's lower frequency at the top. That's actually Mare beating between the the Faraday rotation and the sample rate, the frequency.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So they get these like parabolic, like
funny
arc structures in their dynamic spectra, which is pretty wacky.
Yeah. That's weird.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it sort of makes sense. Like you can see that sort of anti-notice and these things here. But this stuff is pretty much real.
Okay.
The question I guess I have is, what can we do with just Stokes U?
Yeah, with just Stokes U. Yeah, you can still do arm synthesis.
Okay.
And lose the sign of the rotation measure, but you retain basically everything else.
Yeah. It is perhaps possible to tease out some sort of signal, some sort of Stokes Q signal from the parent Stokes Q and Stokes V, but there's like a leakage between them, so that it's a bit funny.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the square root of Q squared plus V squared. So most of this is V, but there is some Q in there.
Mm-hmm.
And I imagine it would have a similar sort of structure to the U. So
I wonder if you use that as Q, I wonder if you actually would, only part of it, only the Q part rotates with lambda squared.
Mm.
So you might actually be able to chuck the whole thing in, and V is going to add some noise to the spectrum, but it's not going to screw up the linear polarization signal coming over.
Right.
Perhaps.
Yeah. And the fact that this is constant with frequency means that the RM is basically zero, right?
Oh, right. In that case, actually, that V would totally confuse it.
So. But this one might be okay. It looks like it's a low RM.
Yeah,
like, if you just look along, like, one band in time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's how we'd have to do it, is cut it up in time bins.
The question is, what would the, like, I don't know really, I mean, the, that looks like it's, yeah, I mean, the question is, would the signal to noise be sufficient?
If you can see by eye, it would work. Yeah.
All right, well, that's good. I have no experience with this stuff.
Yeah, sure.
So.
Yeah. Yep, no, if you can see it in individual channels, there's certainly enough signal to noise.
So this is during the bright bursts. There's, so you can see it in the full dynamic spectrum, that's the U thing there, so it really obviously pops out.
Mm-hmm.
There is the, so slow.
Question, George. So pause the RFM to install the newest version of CUFS in a group directory. That he doesn't want to necessarily put it in group ASCAP because then it becomes the default for everyone who's running it, running any scripts inside there. He's like maybe putting in somewhere like group ASCAP cuffs. That'd be
sure.
Cool.
Yeah. Don't take this the wrong way. I don't really care. Actually.
All right. Cool. I just wanted to make.
I don't really care where they put it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. But I mean, I assume that everyone wanting to run it would want the version that doesn't say vault. But...
Presumably, yeah.
The other place where there's some structure in Q and U is if you squint at this stuff. There seems to be like rapid, like 10-second time scale.
Oh yeah. Indeed. Yeah.
Striping like that. You can sort of see it in the. It's very hard to see. I feel like these would be very hard to see. Like if I try and zoom in on these.
If you RM synthesize that, that's going to pop out.
You reckon?
Oh, yeah.
No.
Pop, pop. Yeah, anytime, like I said, if you can see it visually with that many channels, you'll get a strong signal.
Mm.
Yeah.
So that's a sort of zoom in.
What?
That's a zoom in of the...
Mm.
And
it, that's a bit faint.
Yeah.
But, it's worth a go for sure.
Yeah. The weird thing about it is that it will only really occur in the bandwidth in which the burst is occurring at that particular time. So it's actually like modulated by, you know, the envelope of the burst, which will mean it's somewhat limited in its bandwidth. It won't be across a whole band.
I see.
Yeah. And you see a similar thing with... actually, this one here is strange. Because the burst looks like it's drifting that way, and it's confusing to me.
Yeah, it doesn't look like it's following the drift of the Stokes Eye pattern. You know, burst.
There's so much weird crap going on here.
Yeah, indeed.
But that's a good thing.
Yeah.
So it's almost definitely not instrumental because it's, well, I don't know, it doesn't seem to.
Well, it doesn't look like anything instrumental.
No. Yeah.
So one thing that I'd be trying to do, I think, with the arm synthesis is to use some kind of Stokes Eye threshold.
There it is.
So only out of the parts of the band where, and this would be relevant, I think, for the other case. Not as
yeah, yeah.
You only use the parts of the band where there's Stokes Eye emission above a certain threshold, which is built into this toolkit that I've got.
Yep.
Maybe in the other case, you just used it.
Yeah.
One thing that we might want to experiment with is, you know, doing some kind of rotation in frequency, time, space to line things up. And
yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yes. So that these stripes are no longer diagonal, but vertical. Because it seems like there's the way I'm interpreting this is that there's an intrinsic change in the polarization angle over timescales of like 0.1 of an hour, whatever that is, a minute or 10 minutes, six minutes.
Yeah.
That's occurring, and that's why we're seeing this thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, if we could, either rotate it in time frequency or model that change with time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we can definitely try to get that out.
Yeah. Yeah. And that would get us a direct measurement of that Faraday depth. We also know the magnetic field, which is really interesting.
Mm.
The emission frequency gives you the magnetic field.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Modulo the harmonic. My hunch is that it's in the first harmonic, but it might be in the second harmonic, which might mean that the magnetic field inferred by this emission frequency is divided by two. So it's either like a 300 Gauss or 150 Gauss.
Oh,
okay. Something like that. So it's very high, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
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 That's
a lot of Gauss.
Yeah.
That's a ton of Gauss.
Yeah. I mean, the foot point magnetic field on these stars is like, you know, a few kilogauss, like 5 kilogauss.
So. Right, okay.
that's a global magnetic field. It's crazy.
Yeah.
My stomach is saying it's lunchtime, Andrew.
Yeah.
Not quite
there yet.
Yeah.
And we've got a little bit of learning first as well.
Yeah.
Learn about machine learning.
Hmm.
Speaking of,
Matthew is quite keen to learn a little bit about machine learning, isn't he?
I love learning about machine learning. yes.
So we should be able to work with just you said, but we won't be able to get the sign of the...
The sign of the rotation measure.
Rotation measure.
Yeah, that's right. Because you know that U is wiggling. You know the periodicity with which it's wiggling, but you don't know if it's rotating this way or that way. You just know it's rotating.
Mm-hmm. What I'll do,
why are you 1500 by 1500?
Yeah, basically just need the data in some format, and I can try and pump it through some.
Mm. So the idea I had was for some paper where we combine what Christine did in one of her papers earlier, where using pulsed emission from an ultra-cool dwarf, you can actually work out the geometry of the magnetic field loops.
Mm.
I'll pull up that paper now. So this is from an ultra-cool dwarf. There's some periodic radio bursts, sort of similar to what we saw with UV SETI, but these ones are much narrower. And that's generally what's seen, but you can feed in some model of the magnetic field geometry. And because the emission sites are associated with the magnetic field strength, the emission is frequency is associated with the magnetic field strength, which depends on the altitude along the loop. If you basically would get a series of like beams along the loop, and as they rotate around, you get that sweep in frequency. So this is like in one orientation, so this beam is now flashing past, and then you get another beam flashing past, and another one from three distinct magnetic loops. And you get the drift because of the basically the geometry. So a similar thing we could do, I think we could probably do with this data, and then also do some RM synthesis. And that would give us a geometry plus, well, we, if we know the magnetic field strength, we could work out exactly, measure the electron density.
Yeah, you have to make some assumption about the geometry, obviously.
But
you'd already have that.
Right? So we can like sort of model the geometry. The caveat is that there, these models were not necessarily unique. Just after, say, 50,000 runs, these were the best fitting ones. But it's possible that if you make more instances, there might be other configurations that work. But but you know, that's still. This is still
it's done.
Good.
But absolutely. Yeah. It's at least indicative, right?
Yeah.
It's a kind of, I mean, it can't be too far wrong in
exactly.
From the real situation, right?
So, yeah, I think that would be a pretty nice little paper. And a nice follow up to the recent paper.
Good. Okay. Well, I'm happy to, you know, do some work to get that started and sort of contribute to that for sure.
So. Elliptical polarization is good.
It is.
Because then you can do RM synthesis.
Yeah, elliptical is nice.
And not many things are elliptical.
No, I don't think so.
I think pulsars and Jupiter are the only things that have been found elliptical, apart from UV SETI, which Christine found was elliptical in 2017.
I mean, there's some radio galaxies that have Stokes B, but it's not. It's not really elliptical. It's just that there's both circular and linear polarization from those sources. Excellent.
This stuff is really weird, though.
Yes.
But it's sort of, it reminds me of what we would, of that. It reminds me sort of this, but just this is occurring on a much shorter time scale.
Looks like adding a frequency wiggle gives you a weird little double peaked thing about the middle. So it's pretty tiny though, but I guess that depends on what your amplitude is.
What do you mean by tiny?
Depending on how strong your wiggle is as a function of your signal, it's very small, but I don't know what a reasonable number to put in for that is.
Have you copied that, the rough frequency of the wiggle we're seeing?
I cannot understand Larry's axes. The frequency is the same-ish. So, like, they do appear near the middle, but they seem to be balanced. Also, if you just take a whole bunch of spectrum and you average them together, that's what that is. So if you just took every spectrum and then averaged them, your wiggles should magically appear if they're all at the same frequency.
Oh, right, right.
provided they're all the same frequency.
What's the RM where those peaks occur?
That is about 50.
Ooh, 50.
It's below 100, but that's with I put in 20 megahertz. Yeah, 20 megahertz.
That's the frequency of the...
I mean, the problem is that it's in frequency space, so...
Yeah.
So it's the wavelength.
It's what? Sorry?
It's the quote-unquote wavelength of the frequency range. It's sine of frequency divided by 20 megahertz. Which looks ish appropriately right. And the stronger the signal is, the easier it is to average out.
I have to say, I do not understand why it's double peaked.
Neither.
Hmm.
I mean, maybe it's somehow...
Is it symmetric about zero?
Looks like it.
Yeah, it looks like it. Let's find out.
If you do stakes Q or U only RM synthesis, then you get a symmetric.
Oh,
right. Well, if that's the case, then it's the same signal in U and
Q.
So that'd be Y.
Yep. It's all right. Yeah.
That makes plenty of sense.
Yeah.
That's
not how it works.
So this, I have a cute little tool. This is one of the Linmos mosaics.
Yeah, it's symmetric.
Yeah.
So you can
either be out of sync with each other.
So you just give it the file in which channel you want to look at. So I'm still working on the convolution at the moment. It's slow.
Good channel.
Yeah, so it tests if it's a bad channel, and if it's good, then you get the plot. And so this is of Q, so I've squared it. So sources that are real, who knows where they are? Who knows where the sources are? That's what source finding is for. But the idea is that you can then just inspect a cube and go, that looks like it should do.
Uh-huh.
I wonder if you could like asynchronously do either like a really dodgy source find or a really dodgy convolution and then update the image when it loads. Because that's fairly easy in MapLib.
And just put circles
on or something like that. Yeah. In the interests of this tool looks super useful and it should be everywhere, do you want to put it on PyPy?
PyPy.
So you can pip install cube look if you want or something like that.
Because right. I put my Faraday spectrum generator up there in like 20 minutes the other day.
You can pan and zoom around the cube and it's just like 150 gigabyte file. So trying to load it into something like KV's or DS9.
That looks super rad.
Take forever.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Is there a way of
also the
changing the limits?
Yeah, so right now the limit is set. So I look at the RMS of the image, and the top limit is set to the RMS, so you can see your noise relatively well.
Yep.
It also depends on how good your display is. As in, it looks better on my screen here than it does up there.
Yep.
I can add that as an argument to set like limits.
Yep. Okay. Yeah, that's a bit better.
Yeah, and also it also highlights where you've got dirt on your screen.
Cool. Yeah.
That maybe it's hard to tell when there's stuff to... It's just like what's junk and what's a source, but also the images.
Too much junk in the trunk.
And all, that's probably a little big source there, maybe.
Yeah, that looks fairly real.
Yeah. But I mean, especially my initial goal was like, is there diffuse emission here, maybe? So like, if you're curious about that, or just curious to see the quality of a cube, then you can just do that. But yeah, so I mean, I'll add an argument to set the specified limits, if not.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And what about you were going to do the stack at some point? What happened to that?
The stack ended up being. I still don't have a good workaround for that yet.
Mm.
The stack did look good, but my issue is currently with AstroPy in the way it reads and fits files, in that the instance it creates is its own internal. If you use memmap and deny write. It's its own version of memmap and deny write. And so it doesn't create a NumPy memmapped array. It just creates an array that is memmapped internally within AstroPy. So if you then pass it to NumPy functions like to sum it, average it, whatever, then it tries to read it all into memory and falls over.
Okay. I love AstroPy.
I think I understood that.
Yeah.
I have to admit that my brain sort of shut down halfway through.
Not my Astrophy issues, too big.
I've run into those issues before as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. And trying to do maths on big things.
Yeah.
Makes things bad.
So a solution that I considered, but is almost a pain in the butt in and of itself, is and you can create a NumPy memmapped array, but then you have to write the entire file to a new file. What? Which kind of defeats the purpose of wanting to look at things quickly.
Can you crack open astropy.io.fit and make it not do that?
I feel like this is going beyond the scope of the amount of effort I wanted to put into this.
Absolutely. I kind of wonder, like, why is it rolling its own, though? Like, surely there's a way to read straight off the fits file from disk, if but you know where it is.
So, yeah. Anyway, you can choose a channel. And then if it's a bad channel, it'll select channel 10 channels later.
Okay.
So don't, yeah. I'm not clever about if you select, if you decide to be smart and choose the last channel, it'll probably just tell you that it doesn't exist. I could probably put in, if it's negative, go the other way. In fact, I probably should do that.
Yeah, that sounds useful. Just mod it.
Yeah.
Do you want to get on PyPy?
I'll add in... I mean, would everyone want to be able to do that? Yeah, all right.
Is it on GitHub?
Yes, but it's in a not well-managed repository.
Can you put it in its own repo? And then I can add a setup script for you?
Yeah.
And we can push it to PyPy.
Is there a way to copy over the Git history for just one file?
Yeah.
All right, no. All right, I'll just copy it in its current state.
Good choice.
And then it saves it as a PNG as well when you're done.
Oh, nice.